on the Coyote Sports Network. From Learfield, this is the YoteCast, the official podcast of the University of South Dakota Athletics, taking you inside the stories of Coyote athletes, coaches, administrators, and more. Now, here's your host, John Thayer.
Hey, what's up? How you doing? It's another edition of YoteCast. We're back again. Great to have you for this episode, as always. And this one leading up to South Dakota State, in the South Dakota Showdown Series, which is presented by Midco Sports and the South Dakota Corn Utilization Council. Of course, basketball games coming up this weekend. The women's game will be played in Brookings on Saturday afternoon, while the men's game will be played in Vermilion on Saturday evening. So here we go. Two more points up for grabs. And I wanted to take a look at the standings because I don't know if you're following along. USD jumped out to a 3-0 lead, then cross country lost a couple to SDSU at the championships, football won, women's basketball won, then men's basketball lost. So currently, the South Dakota Showdown Series point standings are 6-3 in favor of USD. So as you know, every point is important in the South Dakota Showdown Series. If women's basketball and men's basketball could both beat state this weekend, the Yotes would have a 5-point advantage. That's 8-3 with 8 points remaining in the showdown series, right? Because typically both teams are going to get, or both programs, both schools are going to get the academic points, the 3 academic points. So what remains, men's and women's swimming and diving, indoor track and field championships, the golf championships for men and women, the outdoor track and field championships for men and women. So those are what are coming up as far as points. And what's really crazy about this is in the month of February, 6 points will be awarded in the South Dakota Showdown Series. And that means if the Yotes get 2 here, they have a 5-point advantage with 8 to go, and you're feeling pretty good about trying to close out the South Dakota Showdown Series. If South Dakota State wins 2, all of a sudden, we've got a 1-point difference in the standings, 6-5, and eight points still to go here through the rest of it. So think about the month of February. It's a big, big month in the showdown series. You got 2 points up for grabs, 1 for women's basketball, 1 for men's basketball. That's this weekend, February 16th. The men's and women's swimming and diving championships each are worth a point. And then at the end of the month, on February 25th, it's the indoor track and field championships, men and women. So a point for each of those up for grabs as well. If you want to keep up with a point tally, see how it all goes, and check out all the history and everything about the series and all this good stuff with the South Dakota Showdown Series, go to sdcornshowdown.com, and you can find out more. It is presented by Midco Sports and the South Dakota Corn Utilization Council. But right now, USD with a 6-3 advantage, hopefully adding a couple more points to that total this week. All right, coming up in the podcast today, it's great to have you for this episode. But coming up in the podcast today, we're going to talk to a sprinter for track and field from Harrisburg, South Dakota, who has gone through an interesting medical situation to recover from and still able to compete at the Division I level. We'll talk to Aaron Kinney coming up here in just a little bit. But we'll start the podcast, as we always do, with Athletics Director David Herbster.
David, it's State Week again for basketball, and I know these teams continue to press on. And we've talked about the success that they've had. You know, you look at women's basketball, they're coming off of a couple of road wins, but right now the nation's longest winning streak, and we hope that can continue. But the longer you have those win streaks, the bigger that target continues to grow. And maybe pressure, outside pressure on a team. They try to just stay with themselves, but a lot of people start talking about it. It's hard not to hear the stuff about the nation's longest winning streak.
Oh, it is, you know. And, you know, as a team, you can focus in on yourself. You can focus in on the things that you need to do better. Certainly focus in on your opponent. But you're right. It's with social media, with our phones, with everything that, that you have access to, they all know there's a winning streak, and there's going to be pressure, and it's the pressure they have on themselves to kind of to continue to win, and whether it's warranted or not, that's in the back of your mind. And so the coaching staff's job right now should try to deflect all of that and just focus on the task at hand. It's one game at a time. And so that sounds easy, and coaches are always going to try to do that. But, you know, you're right past the halfway point of the season, and so you've also got to mix things up a little bit because it's – in my conversation with Don last weekend, it's you're trying to do something a little bit different. You don't want things to get stale. You don't want things to just to get old. And it's not that winning is old, but you've been playing at such a high level of success. You're right, because that target does get a little bit bigger. But that's kind of what you'd rather. You'd rather have that than be on the bottom side looking up and hoping you can get your first win, because then there's just a sense of helplessness. At least on this side, you've got a sense of accomplishment that, but it. Probably internally, and not wanting to let their teammates down and each other down, I think as much as anything where a lot of that pressure comes from.
Yeah, no doubt. And as you talk about looking for the first win, it was just a few weeks ago, about a month ago, the men's basketball team was looking for their first conference win. They've really turned things around. They've had a couple of guys step up and perform. They've won six out of their last seven, and that only loss was a overtime loss to North right. Dakota State that was so close to being a win off the shot from Tasos Kamateros, but unfortunately didn't work. But it's fun to see the way that men's basketball, through a variety of challenges, because they've had a couple of rescheduled games, right. have been able to find a way to turn things around.
Yeah, you know, and they got a tough week coming up. You know, the one positive is that we only have one game this week, and that's South Dakota State, but then we turn right around and play the rescheduled game up in Fargo on Monday. And then that leads into another two-game week after that on the road. So, yeah, they're going to have a tough row at it next week. It's probably, what, four games in 8 days or that type of stretch. So they're going to really have to kind of buckle down. But you're right, winning six out of the last seven, have been playing good basketball. In that, it's been interesting in that time frame to watch a couple of the games where, I mean, what did we make the one game, 17 three-pointers, something along that line? It was something. It was just a really high number. And then so outside shooting has been kind of a little bit of up and down for them. But the one thing that I haven't faulted them is their energy, the way they've approached the game, how hard they play, both on the offensive side and the defensive side of the ball. That it's going to come down for them is probably shooting and free throws. They rebound the ball really well. They defend. They get steals. They take care of the basketball, all those kind of little things. Now, certainly that's going to be tested this weekend. You're coming off, or South Dakota State coming off a win on Monday versus North Dakota at North Dakota. And now they have to come down here. Watching SDSU play, they spread the floor really well. They move well. They shoot incredibly well. And they can spread the floor out well enough and then also get it down low to Doug Wilson and Apple. And they've got a really good rhythm going, I guess I should say. So Saturday is going to be a fun, actually, for both sides when the men play here in Vermilion, and the huge test for the women going up to Brookings. To battle them. And on the women's side, you got the two best teams in the league by far. And on the men's side, you've got SDSU riding their win streak, 11 in a row or 12 in a row or whatever it is. And then us coming in there, or them coming down here, and us defending home court and trying to take a crack at them.
You know, it was a little over a month ago that we talked about the announcement the Summit League had made that they were going to reschedule games. And, you know, kind of shared your thoughts on that. And now we've had a chance to live it for a month and look back. And I know this has happened to a lot of teams, but the men's basketball team is about to play their third week of four games in 8 days in a month's time.
Right.
So obviously it hit them a little harder than it does some other teams. But looking back now, how do you think that this process was handled, how it ended up working out with the reschedules and finding ways to get games in, even though at times it has really taxed some of these teams?
Right. I would say it's probably about the best that we could do, other than just flat-out canceling the games and not playing them. And then there's a ripple effect, because it hits, in a lot of the cases, that hits two teams. Not, you know, A, the team that actually had the game canceled, because of COVID, and then the other team that had nothing to do with it. And so it really hurts two teams. I think it's worked out about as best as it is, as good as it can. Now, it really comes into play when you talk about 4 games in 8 days or 5 games in 10 days, whatever it is, and those are taxing, and you're trying to eliminate that as much as possible. But we're certainly a beneficiary of it, and one of it was us.
Yep.
You know, and well, actually, two of them were us, and one was somebody else. And so we're not. This whole thing wasn't meant to penalize anybody. It was meant to get in as many games as we could, so we can have as comprehensive a schedule as we can leading into the Summit League tournament. And we didn't know where it was going to end up, and we did not want anybody to not have enough games to qualify for the NCAA tournament. So I think we got about, what do we have, about 4-6 more weeks, something like that, to go, and let's hope that we don't have any more 4 games in 8 day stretches, because that's tough from a, you know, taking these kids out of class for an extended period of time, because we missed a couple games early at the beginning of the season where the class wasn't even in session. So we got, and the road games, we have to make those up during the semester, when before that wasn't an issue. So that part's a challenge. And, you know, the recovery time, the travel time, and certainly from the coach's perspective, the prep time. And you'd like to, you know, for these kids that you're getting to this part of the season, you've got a lot of bumps and bruises that you'd like to get a little extra time to heal.
We haven't talked about this, but the Summit League has made it official that in 2023 it will expand the Summit League basketball tournament to a 10-team tournament, mm-hmm. which means we add a day and the tournament will start on Friday instead of on Saturday like it normally does, and the Friday will be 7-10, 8-9. Maybe shed some light on those discussions on when the right time is to move to a 10-team tournament, allowing St. Thomas to be a part of that tournament, even though they're ineligible for the NCAA tournament for the next few years. How do you try to work through that process to decide when the right time is to expand that tournament and include everybody?
Now, you know, now that we're 10 teams, you know, because we certainly had the conversation, what are the pros and cons of doing it? And I think amongst the coaches, it wasn't unanimous, but the majority of coaches on both sides wanted to have all 10 teams. And we have the opportunity now to bring in all 10 teams. We couldn't do it this year from a timing standpoint, from a facility standpoint, but moving it ahead towards next year, towards the 22-23 season, we were all in agreement on, let's do it. Let's bring everybody to Sioux Falls. Let's really showcase Summit League basketball. Now, you're right, it does add an extra day. And now, depending on when you're playing, maybe it adds an extra day for you, maybe it doesn't, depending on the layout, the schedule, and what seed you're at. But I think it's so many of the teams, I'd say probably well over half the conferences in the country, it's an all-comers tournament. I mean, think about back when the Big East was about 16 teams, and it was a 5 or 6 day event. That's really long. It is. And you have some teams that have like a double bye. And, yep. And who was it? It wasn't that long ago. I think it was Syracuse that ended up winning it, and they had to play five. They had to win all 5 games to win it. I could be wrong on the actual team there. But, yeah, I think we celebrate. We bring in all teams. I think that's what we had talked about for quite a few years, but we just couldn't get to that 10 teams and solidly get to those 10 teams.
You know, we could potentially have a situation where St. Thomas wins the Summit League tournament and isn't eligible for the NCAA mm-hmm. tournament, which means they've now decided the highest regular season finisher, which may be the tournament runner-up, and it may not be,
right.
would be the representative mm-hmm. for the NCAA tournament. At least for the next few years, you've just made the regular season mean that much more than maybe it has before, because a lot of people look at leagues our size and say, you know, at the end of the day, your season comes down to a 3-game tournament in Sioux Falls mm-hmm. to try to advance. But now the regular season potentially could mean something the next several years.
Right. And, you know, we had talked about that. If you're in a situation like a St. Thomas, that if they are going to win it, you want your best, and they're not eligible for the tournament, you want your best team in the tournament, or the one that finished the best, and at that point you're rewarding the regular season champion. It's it's different, right? Because the NIT takes our conference regular season conference champion should they not win the regular or they not win the conference tournament. As almost, I don't want to say it's a reward, but again, you're trying to find the teams that have played the best, most comprehensive kind of schedule of basketball over several months, and in this case, through the conference season. So this is not unprecedented in us doing it. It will be interesting if we actually have to enact it.
Yeah.
And then that'll be the big conversation topic for a while.
No doubt. It'll be it'll be interesting to see year one, just how it works starting on Friday and just how the tournament flows. But it looks like a decent setup. It really does. I mean, it looks like it could be a fun. I mean, for people who love going to that tournament and just watching basketball, you get one more day and one more reason to not go to work on a Friday or a day of the week and take a day off and just go sit at the Summit League tournament.
Right. You know, I think about it too, and yeah, it's a lot of basketball, but not really. And when you look at some of the other bigger conferences, it's just more basketball than what we've been used to it, and with ours traditionally being a 3-day tournament. So, you know, I say let's bring them all in, let's play, kind of throw the gloves on, ring the bell, and let's go at it and see who comes out.
Yep, let's go see what happens. Speaking of that, you know, coming up this weekend, I know that a lot of the sports have really gotten started. We've been talking about swimming and track and field. Women's tennis has been in action. But track is an opportunity to compete at home. The alumni meet is this weekend during the day on Saturday before, of course, men's basketball takes on South Dakota State. But an opportunity for these track athletes to showcase right here at home.
Yeah. And for a chance for our folks to watch our track team, it's in essence an inter-squad track meet, and but yet the alumni can come participate as well. Probably have to make them sign a waiver, and I don't want to blow an Achilles down there. You know what I mean? But no, it's good. It's a good opportunity to see them. Yep. A lot of tremendous athletes. We got two Summit League athletes of the week this week, and Sarah and Eric, and it just, they just kind of keep rolling. But we're starting to get through the meat of that season, so it's a little pregame before the state game. We'll just have to really figure out where people are truly pregaming.
Yeah.
Prior to the game.
you may have believed this on Monday of this week, but maybe not the rest of the week, but golf gets started this coming Monday and Tuesday. Women's golf will compete, of course, in Texas, where it's a little bit warmer, but I always think it's crazy when we're talking February and the golf season's continuing.
I know. You know, I think it, you know, we got golf already on the road in Texas. The following weekend, we have softball now on the road. So it's gearing up, and of course, softball's down in Texas competing, which I'm not sure I'd want to be there today. Isn't it the ice and snow that's they're kind of getting hit with today? So it's there. It's, so we're at that point. Once golf tees off and then softball hits that first pitch, we just have men's golf to get going, and that will happen the following weekend, that we're going to have pretty much everybody in action.
Yeah, well, we'll keep on tabs with all of it. Big weekend for a lot of sports coming up, and of course, it's the South Dakota Showdown Series with men's and women's basketball. Women's basketball in Brookings Saturday afternoon. The men's basketball team will play in the evening in Vermilion on Saturday evening. David, great stuff. Thanks so much for the time. Always appreciate it.
Thanks, John. Appreciate you, man.
He's David Herbster, the athletic director at the University of South Dakota. Good stuff there. As always, if you want to submit a question for David Herbster, you can do so through social media posts. You can also reach out to me directly. I would gladly take your questions. And you can also email yokecast@usd.edu. Again, questions for Ask the AD. We'll present questions to David Herbster each and every week. So get us your questions. And we'll get his thoughts on it. All right, I mentioned Erin Kinney. She is a sophomore sprinter from Harrisburg, South Dakota. She is coming off of a record-breaking performance, and it's always fascinating to see record-breaking performances, right? And we see athletes do this all the time. It gets more fascinating when you dive into somebody's story, and for the case of Erin Kinney, a medical situation that she had to recover from, and she has bounced back to be a Division I athlete. So I had a chance to catch up with Erin Kinney earlier this week and talk to her about her track career.
Erin, you continue through the track season, really kind of fresh getting that started. How has it been this year compared to last year, just getting back into more of a, I guess, normal routine, if you will?
So last year was really up in the air with, in the beginning of the season, we didn't really know if there was going to be a season. And then when things got rolling, I mean, it was scary when little COVID things happened, like, is the season going to end? We opened up outdoor with Texas, and I think that was really eye-opening, racing against some really fast people that there wasn't a lot of competition for me in high school. And getting beat that bad really opened my eyes and kind of showed me that I really need to train hard and go into the next season ready to roll.
You talk about that eye opener.
Describe the feeling when you get on the track and you're coming, you had a tremendous high school career. You were faster than about everyone all the time, right? And you get out there and you realize how fast the athletes are at this level. What was that moment like or that feeling for you?
It was a little scary. In high school, maybe my 7th and 8th grade years, I had some girls really far ahead of me, but I feel like going through my freshman, through my junior year, I was always the person someone was trying to chase. And then when I opened my season with 100 in Texas and I had a girl probably 10, 20 meters in front of me, it scared me a little bit and I didn't really know what to do. And I just realized that I had a lot of work to do to try and compete with people at the D1 level.
I think in track you always have goals. You want to break records and because that means you're the fastest. It means your training has all come together. You're coming off of a record-breaking performance. What was that like for you?
The first time I broke the record, I wasn't too surprised. My race felt really good. And then last weekend when I broke it twice, it just kind of showed me that I have more to give. And I just hope that I can go into the 7.4s, hopefully at our home meet or maybe the next meet.
You mentioned, just having to train more or thinking a mindset of training more after you had your first collegiate meet. What kind of things did you change or do differently maybe about your training that has allowed you to excel?
So for the 60, it's mainly the block start. And at this point, it's the fine, tiny little things that I need to correct, such as the little block start movements or keeping my head and my back in the right position when I'm running at the finish line. And it's just little things that I need to correct to hopefully lower the record little by little each time.
You know, everybody has amazing stories, I always think, and a lot of times we don't know about them. And you're here running track at the Division I level, but for you it wasn't probably always easy to get to this level. I know you've got a interesting medical history. What kind of challenges have those provided throughout your life?
So I was a gymnast when I was younger, and I was born with a pars defect, which means my lower lumbar vertebrae were fused together. So when I would do a flip or extend or arch my back, there was no flexibility in my back and something had to give. So in 7th grade, coming out of the blocks at Howard Wood, I completely broke my L4 in my back. So with a back injury, it kind of makes my lower muscles a little bit tighter and I can't do some certain stretches or arch or flex my back. So it's just kind of trying to find modifications of certain exercises or making sure when I'm lifting that my back's in the right position so I don't throw my back out or certain things like that.
Before you had the injury coming out of the blocks, obviously you were aware of your medical situation a little bit, I would imagine. Did it ever cross your mind that something could happen, or how did you mentally just want to move forward?
So I actually had no clue about it. After Howard Wood, I had really bad back pain, and my high school coach and my mom just kind of thought it was just a little excuse because Aaron got beat. Well, I told my mom I needed to go to a doctor in June after my 7th grade track season, and they did an MRI and a CAT scan and all that fancy stuff, and they found that the vertebrae was broken, and they gave me a lot of lists of limitations of things that I couldn't do anymore. Things that little kids enjoy, like carnival rides or things that are very jarring on the back. And I mean, one small move and the back could completely slip. My high school coach wanted to try long jump and they were scared with the landing. If one wrong land, the back could completely go in a wrong direction.
What was that like to learn like for you outside of wanting to say, Mom, I told you so, and to your coach wanting to say, I told you so, that something was wrong? What was that moment like for you when you realized this was a back injury, potentially serious, and was going to limit you from doing some of those things that your friends wanted to do?
It was a little scary. I always kind of wanted to go against my mom and say, oh, it's not that serious. I'll be fine. I can do this. Well, as I got older, I kind of realized, well, I only have one body my whole life, so I just kind of have to take care of it and start listening to what my mom says and just really paying attention to the little things I do to keep healthy.
What have you had to do to overcome that, to regain your health and get to this level? Because this is a high level of competition, and going through a challenge like that can be difficult for a lot of people. So what has that process been like, trying to get yourself back on, pun intended, back on track?
I had a really good support system back home with my physical therapist and my trainer, and they both worked very hard together to see what exercises hurt me and what didn't and what kind of worked for me to keep the back and everything healthy. Their dry needling helps me a lot. When I was younger, I mean, needles don't sound too appealing, and after being stabbed in multiple muscles with needles two to three times a week, I just kind of got used to the little things that keep me healthy and doesn't faze me too much anymore.
Looking back now, as you sit have a chance to reflect on all of that you've overcome to even be a Division I track athlete, coming off a record-breaking performance, knowing that you've done some of that, does it mean more to you when you're able to break a record or win a race or anything like that, just knowing everything you've done over the last several years to get to this point?
Yeah, last year I really struggled trying to even reach my high school PRs, and then this year with the fourth or third meet where I broke the record, it just kind of showed me that all my hard work is paying off and that things do get better when things get hard. You just can't give up, and you just have to go through it with a good mindset and know that things will get better.
You bounced back. You had a great high school track career. When did you know that Division I track at the next level was a real opportunity for you?
I think it probably was my sophomore year when I won my first state championship. I had a lot of good competition growing up, but I just always enjoyed being pushed by athletes, and I knew that D1 was where I could be pushed to become a better runner.
Why did you choose the University of South Dakota? I mean, it's not far from home. When did that become a reality for you?
So my mom and both of her brothers graduated from USD, so I was raised as a Coyote fan and to always not like the Blues school. So wouldn't say I was pushed, but USD was always highly encouraged by my family. And when I took my official visit here, I just fell in love with the team. Two of my biggest rivals in high school at the time committed here to run, and I had a great relationship with them. Both of the coaches made me feel that they wanted me here, and I just knew I could grow as a sprinter here.
So now that you've been here and you've experienced the program, I mean, it's no secret, USD track and field has been tremendous, and they've had a lot of success. What have you experienced that you feel like makes this program consistently a high-quality program and a competitor?
I think it's just how much the coaches actually care. Both Vasquez and Lucky have worked with me on the tiniest of things in a race that I didn't even think would matter, like how high or low my heel is coming off the blocks, and just the tiny little things that make such a difference in a race. And they care more about you as a person than an athlete. If you have a test, like the day of practice, and you're going to miss it, they care more about you studying for the test than they do you being here to practice. And I think them caring about you as a person goes a long ways with your athletic career.
You talk about all the little things that can make the mind really wander and really think constantly. How do you make that a routine so that you're not constantly wondering if you stepped wrong or moved wrong and slowed your time down?
I think it's just me having to trust my coaches that they know what they're talking about, and that even though I think I'm going fast with this type of running, that when they say they want me to do something else, that they know what they're talking about and that it'll make me go faster if I know how to correct my form.
Well, Vasky had a great career, and Lucky's been around for a long time, so they probably know what they're talking about, right?
Yep.
What is it about your teammates that maybe push you or you push them and continue to try to elevate the program? Because obviously the ultimate goal is a Summit League championship and then success beyond the Summit League.
it's just really a team here. No one's worried about, oh, if my teammate beats me. Everyone wants their teammates to do better than them and just cheers for them and elevates them at track meets. And if you always need something, you know you have 100 brothers and sisters to rely on throughout the year.
If people come to the Dakota Dome during the day, they'll notice all throughout the day there's track athletes practicing at different times. What is a, I guess, it, I don't know if there's a regular routine, but what is an in-season day like for you as you work through classes and training and just what your days look like?
So we usually have classes in the morning. So on Monday, Wednesday, Friday, for example, I have classes from like 8 to 1. And then I come to the dome at like 2 to 3, depending on when practice is. And we split up into groups. I'm a short sprinter, so it's usually me and Dylan doing the shorter workouts and all the longer sprinters doing their own thing. And we'll do some running workouts, maybe a little plyos, and then go to the dome and lift and then do a cool down and then rehab in the training room or do whatever we need to get our bodies healthy for the next practice.
We talked about the challenges you've overcome and you continue to overcome as you work through your track career. What would be your message to somebody who deals with something out of their control and really wants to bounce back and do what you did, recover, get back into a rhythm, have a lot of success, and get to the Division I level? What would you tell that person?
Just never give up. You never know what's on the other side. Everyone has to go through bad moments to get to the good moments of your life. And I just think you need to go into it with a positive attitude. And even when things are rough or you have a hard workout, you just have to know that it's going to better yourself maybe in a day or in a year or maybe down the road. It'll get better.
Aaron, great stuff. Thanks so much for the time. We greatly appreciate it. This was a lot of fun and continued success for you. Good luck.
Thank you.
That's Aaron Kinney. She is a member of the track and field team at the University of South Dakota, a sprinter for the Yotes, coming off of a record-breaking performance last time out. We'll continue to see how Aaron Kinney and the rest of her teammates do throughout the course of their season. They keep fighting on, and you know, coming up, it'll be the indoor track championships, and then before you know it, we will have an outdoor season, and they'll be back at it. But the track team, home on Saturday this week, they will host the alumni event, so you can check them out at home. It's their only home indoor meet of the year. They will have, of course, a home opportunity in the outdoor season as well. But you've been around for spring in South Dakota. Just don't know how the outdoor season is going to play out, but we'll keep an eye on all of that. All right, let's take a look at the calendar and what's going on in Coyote Athletics. Coming up this weekend, women's tennis is on the road. They are in the state of Washington. They play at Eastern Washington on Friday, and then on Saturday, women's tennis will play against Gonzaga. They will also play against Montana State now on Sunday as well. So had a little bit of changing in the schedule, but they will get their matches out in the state of Washington. Also on Saturday, I mentioned the track and field alumni meet that gets underway in the morning, so check that out if you wish. We know the basketball games are coming up this weekend. The women's basketball game against South Dakota State in Brookings at 2:00. You can hear it on the Coyote Sports Network. You can also watch it on Midco Sports. 2:00 tip time. Carter Woodeal is on the air a half hour before tip time. And then the men's basketball game, also available on the Coyote Sports Network. We're on the air at 6:30. Tip off at 7:00. And then, of course, you can watch that on Midco Sports as well. However you consume Coyote Athletics, check it out this weekend. Big, big basketball games as South Dakota and South Dakota State get together. And then coming up on Monday, men's basketball is back in action. They are on the road in Fargo. It's a 7:00 tip time. We'll be on the air on the Coyote Sports Network at 6:30. And then, of course, men's basketball will hit the road later in the week as well. Also, Monday and Tuesday, women's golf gets their season underway. They are at the Texas State Invitational in Kyle, Texas. They'll play Monday and Tuesday. So golf season is here, believe it or not. All right, that's a look at what's going on in Coyote Athletics. For ticket information, go to GoYotes.com. You can keep up with all the stuff going on in Coyote Athletics on the GoYotes.com website as well. Catch a game, match, or meet soon. That's it for us this week. Thanks so much for taking the time to listen to this episode. Hope you enjoyed it. We'll do it again next week. Until next time, I'm John Thayer. Stay safe and go Yotes.
Thanks for listening to YoteCast, the official podcast of the University of South Dakota Athletics. The preceding has been a Learfield presentation on the Coyote Sports Network.